Today on the Undivided Podcast.
We will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight.
Finally, something that can bring Americans together.
Is this one of the phenomena that we can't explain?
I do not have an explanation for what this object is.
Meanwhile, Elon Musk says he's ditching Dems, saying they have become the party of division and hate. But I have a few questions about that. And finally, an exclusive interview with Democratic Congresswoman Marilyn Strickland about the future of reproductive rights in America.
Justice Thomas is married to a white woman.
Yes, and Justice Thomas often votes and rules on things that are against his own interests.
Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you so much for listening to the Undivided Podcast. I finally found it. After years of trying to bridge America's political divides, I think this is it. It's the one thing that's going to bring mankind together. Aliens. Specifically, an alien invasion of some kind. I don't want to wish for it. I don't want to hope for it. However, it might be our last chance to bring people together. As you know, Congress had hearings on UFOs this past week.
What are we observing?
What you see here is aircraft that is operating in a U.S. Navy training range that has observed a spherical object. In that area, and as they fly by it, they take a video. You see a, it looks reflective in this video, somewhat reflective, and it quickly passes by the cockpit of the aircraft.
And is this one of the phenomena that we can't explain?
I do not have an explanation for what this specific object is.
More on that hearing from NBC.
Deputy Director of Naval Intelligence Scott Bray raising more eyebrows when answering this question.
There have been no collisions between any U.S. assets and one of these UAPs, correct?
We have not had a collision. We've had at least 11 near misses.
Defense officials testifying that there were at least 18 cases where they had data from multiple sensors showing objects that moved in ways that could not be explained, adding they would share more details during a closed-door classified setting. In the past, fighter pilots and former Pentagon officials have told us some of the objects were capable of instant acceleration and estimated speeds of well over 13,000 miles an hour.
Now, I'm going to let you guys in on, I don't want to sound like George Norrie, but I will say I'm definitely an alien believer, okay? Because I just feel like the evidence at this point is overwhelming. There's so many things that can't be explained by any man-made technology. And honestly, a lot of the stuff that was talked about in this congressional hearing, I'd already heard about because I watch such shows as Skinwalker Ranch. It's about a ranch in Utah that is definitely the site of some paranormal activity. You're going to be like, oh my gosh, Brandy's crazy. I had no idea she was crazy. No, I'm just open-minded, okay? I'm interested in things that I can't explain. But I think it was nice to have something. I realized that UFOs aren't like fun. It's kind of scary, actually, to realize that they were saying that it had, like, as is in that NBC package, multiple near misses with these things. I realize it's like a national security threat or perhaps a global security threat. But I also think it's interesting that everybody's sort of into this, the fact that Congress is having hearings on it. It's a point of interest that transcends political or social or economic boundaries. And I think it's nice to have something like that for a change. So that's why I thought, if anything can bring us together, it is the threat of a global alien invasion. And I mean, you know, I mean, my favorite presidential speech, of course, is from President Thomas Whitmore.
Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interest. Perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July, and you will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live, to exist. And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
I mean, my favorite presidential speech doesn't have to be a real president, right? That was a great speech. So maybe we can have a moment like that in the near future. Humankind is at the brink of complete and total annihilation from an alien race. We defeat the aliens, and finally we've bridged our political divides. Because at this point, that's what it might take. I wanted to play for you some of the wildest audio I've heard during the pandemic, truly. And there's been quite a few to pick from. Governor Jay Inslee of Washington State has had some of the strictest mandates in the country, and we're still in a state of emergency in Washington. And he even said, out of his own mouth at one stage in the pandemic, that he was the only one capable of saving lives. So he's definitely got this hero complex. But he was asked at a press briefing this past week, you know, what it's going to take for him to roll back some of these existing remaining mandates, like the mandate for state workers to be vaccinated. Listen to Governor Jay Inslee's answer.
What metric would convince you to lift the vaccine mandate for state employees?
Well, as I said, we may make some changes in the near future involving some contractors, frankly, and we're looking at that issue right now. But it's not so much a metric, it's the nature of the disease. We don't want our state employees going to the hospital or dying for several reasons. One, we care about them. And they do die if they don't get a vaccine.
They do die if they don't get the vaccine. It sounds like a lot of certitude there, that if you don't get the vaccine, you will definitely die.
And they do die if they don't get a vaccine.
As I say every time I talk about vaccines, I have the vaccine. I believe that if you don't get the vaccine, you have a greater risk of being seriously sick or, yes, dying. But I also understand that that risk of death from COVID-19 is incredibly, incredibly low. And what's this about the metrics not mattering? During this entire pandemic, Governor Jay Inslee has always said it's about the science, it's about the science, it's about the data, it's about the data, it's about the numbers. And now all of a sudden?
But it's not so much a metric, it's the nature of the disease.
Oh, now all of a sudden the metrics don't matter. It's about feelings.
We don't want our state employees going to the hospital or dying for several reasons. One, we care about them, and they do die if they don't get a vaccine.
The governor wants to be the hero and protect people who aren't willing to protect themselves. Well, Governor, that's not your job. If somebody doesn't want to get the vaccine and they die, that's very, very sad. It has happened, yes, in this state, and it is heartbreaking when it happens. But it's a decision that they made, presumably, with all the available information at their disposal. But for Governor Jay Inslee at this stage in the pandemic to say something like this,
and they do die if they don't get a vaccine,
it's an absolute mischaracterization. Moving on now to Elon Musk and his just, Elon Musk, I feel like, is taking over every single news cycle. A couple stories involving Elon Musk. And look, I've said it, I'm a big Elon Musk fan. I just think it's interesting. I love how he just does not care about what people think about him. I love how he's like, Twitter's broken, I'm just going to buy it and fix it when there's much more lucrative things he could spend his money on. But there was something this week that he tweeted out that I vehemently disagree with. Elon Musk tweeted, "In the past, I voted Democrat because they were mostly the kindness party, but they have become the party of division and hate, so I can no longer support them and will vote Republican." First of all, I can relate a little bit to this tweet from Elon Musk. Certainly in my younger years, I would have considered myself a Democrat. When I was in college, I volunteered for the campaign of a Democratic Senate candidate. But Seattle really changed me and changed my outlook on the direction of the Democratic Party and specifically the progressive wing and some of the things they were doing to the city. I just wrote an op-ed about it on my Patreon page, patreon.com/undivided. You know, I became incredibly disenchanted with the Democratic Party and what I felt was their forward-facing persona of being kind and caring and about helping people. And then what I really saw unfolding was the nastiness and the viciousness. I mean, at every turn, I was demonized, called right-wing, anti-homeless because I was doing my job, because I was asking hard questions. And I always tell people, if you think you're a Democrat, come live in Seattle for a little bit. And you tell me if you still are a Democrat at the end of a few years. So I can understand what Elon is saying when he says, in the past, I voted Democrat because they were mostly the kindness party, but they have become the party of division and hate. But where he loses me is when he says, so I can no longer support them and will vote Republican. I am vehemently opposed to default voting. I think it is the death of common sense in this country. When you look at a little letter next to someone's name and say, yep, that's the one. The vast variety of candidates that can run under and do run under a Democratic ticket and a Republican ticket is overwhelming. When you have someone like, say, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, the chair of the Progressive Caucus, and moderate Senator Joe Manchin in the same party, what a huge differential that is of their priorities, of their ideology. So if you're just default voting for Democrats, you're going to get a whole variety of people and of politicians. And the same is true for Republicans. When you've got people from Marjorie Taylor Greene to Senator Mitt Romney that identify as being with the same party, that's a big old tent if I've ever seen one. I also don't support the idea of default voting because it suggests that individual candidates don't have to earn your vote, that you're just going to give it to them because, again, of this shallow political allegiance. And I think that's silly. And I honestly think it's pretty lazy for voters to just say, oh, all right, write down the ticket. I mean, gosh, in Washington, we get a voter pamphlet. We can read about every single one of the candidates. We have the internet. It takes like 10, 15 minutes of research to really decide, does this person deserve my vote or not? So I wonder. And I said this on Twitter about Elon Musk's tweet. He's just said, look, we got to stop this default voting. I don't, you know, make every candidate, Democrat, Republican, Independent, prove to you why they're the best person for the job. But also, I do wonder, and as much as I love Elon Musk, I wonder if he sent this out because he saw a story coming. So I haven't read the full tweet for you yet. Let me read the full tweet for you. In the past, I voted Democrat because they were mostly the kindness party. But they have become the party of division and hate, so I can no longer support them and will vote Republican. Now, watch their dirty tricks campaign against me unfold. And he put a little popcorn emoji. That's interesting. Watch their dirty tricks campaign against me unfold. That was May the 18th he sent that out. One day later, May 19th, Business Insider comes out with a story. The headline: a SpaceX flight attendant said Elon Musk exposed himself and propositioned her for sex, documents show. The company paid $250,000 for her silence. Now, we know by this point, according to the article, that Business Insider had already reached out to Elon Musk for comment. And so it does sound like and seem like, in hindsight, looking at his tweet, that this was sort of him prepping the public for this, for a smear campaign or for an attack against him in the form of this article. Now, I'm not going to place really any opinion on whether this actually happened. He's never been charged with anything. This happened in 2016. I will say the accusations are very specific. She says basically he whipped it out and asked her for like more than just a massage and said he'd buy her a horse, was rubbing her leg allegedly without her consent. But as Elon Musk pointed out to Business Insider, he sent them an email in response and he said, if I were inclined to engage in sexual harassment, this is unlikely to be the first time in my entire 30-year career that it comes to light. And he went on to call it a politically motivated hit piece. And Elon Musk is very much at the center of a lot of attention right now. So apparently this woman is bound by a non-disclosure agreement. So it wasn't her that came forward. It was her friend who she'd told all of this to. And I don't know if that's just a convenient way to get around the non-disclosure agreement. But as far as why these accusations are just coming out now, the friend said, quote, "I absolutely felt a responsibility to come forward with it, especially now. He's the richest man in the world. Someone with that level of power causing that kind of harm and then throwing some money at the situation, that's not accountability. There are predators all over the world, but when someone is particularly wealthy and powerful, they literally have systems that are like a machine working for them to set them up to be able to do whatever they want." So it is interesting that on the 18th, Elon Musk sort of prepped the internet for attacks on him. He views this as politically motivated. All we know is what's in this Business Insider piece. And I will say, you know, sometimes you have people kind of distancing themselves from someone who's accused in this nature, or you have someone who's accused, you know, offer a mea culpa or something. Elon Musk does not seem to be interested in any of that. He's joking about it. He, in the tweet said, so in 2021, he tweeted, "If there's ever a scandal about me, please call it Elongate." If you get it, Elongate. And he retweeted that today. He said, "Finally, we get to use Elongate as a scandal name." And then he tweeted, "The attacks against me should be viewed through a political lens. This is their standard despicable playbook, but nothing will deter me from fighting for a good future and your right to free speech." So Elon Musk vehemently denying those accusations, also saying he is no longer going to vote for Democrats, but instead he's going to choose to do something that I don't particularly care for, which is default vote for Republicans. I need to get Elon Musk on the podcast. That would be a great interview. We'll work on it. We're working on it. Coming up, I had a pretty interesting exchange with a Democratic congresswoman from Washington State about the likely repeal of Roe v. Wade, what it means for the country, and what it means, in her opinion, for the future of interracial marriage in the United States. We'll have part of that interview for you coming up. But first, I want to talk to you about cash out refis. The mortgage market right now is, I mean, atrocious. You've got interest rates that are going up, and so not a lot of people are going out and buying new houses right now. But there is still a lot of interest for cash out refis because, frankly, there's people who need access to cash. And if you've got equity in your home, you can basically get that money from yourself. A cash out refi, definitely not for everyone. But Rich Hunt, the founder of 1530 Mortgage, talked with me about who might benefit from it.
It's a strategy that basically is going to let you get out of debt. And you're using your home to do that. It would be nice to save some money and put something away rather than give it to the banks and their high interest credit card debt.
Sounds like, why wouldn't you do it? But I'm sure there are some people who it just isn't the right fit for.
I would never advise somebody that's 20 years through their 30-year fixed mortgage to go pull a bunch of cash out.
So if you think a cash out refi might be the answer for you right now, reach out to the folks at 1530 Mortgage. I know the guys who will pick up the phone and talk to you. Tell them I say hi. And just ask them some questions about it. Again, it might not be right for you, but it might be exactly what you need right now. So give them a call, 206-207-7777, or pay them a visit, 1530mortgage.com. 1530 Mortgage, NMLS ID 1761573, Equal Housing Opportunity. For informational purposes only, not an offer to extend credit. Credit approval required. Information and or dates are subject to change without notice. Not available in all states. Certain programs may not be eligible. Other restrictions may apply. I've been talking on the podcast about what impact this renewed abortion debate is going to have on the midterms. I saw a fascinating poll from 538, which is run by statistician Nate Silver. And 538, you know, some of their polls, I'm like, I don't know if I believe that, some of their predictions. But this is just a poll where they asked 2,000 Americans what they are most worried about right now. And I was kind of curious, okay, well, where does abortion fall on that list? Well, when you look at overall for these 2000s, and you don't separate them by Democrat and Republican, these are the things they're most concerned about in descending order. So not surprisingly, they are most concerned about inflation or increasing costs. Not surprising at all. The second thing, I'm just going to go down the list until we hit abortion. How does that sound? Political extremism, crime or gun violence, immigration, government budget and debt, climate change, race and racism, foreign conflicts or terrorism, we still are not to abortion yet, COVID-19, economic inequality, healthcare, election security, education, taxes, opioid or drug addiction, abortion. Only around 5% of people, Democrat or Republican or independent, of those 2,000 polled say their single biggest issue right now, their single biggest concern is abortion. It's almost at the very bottom of the list. So if Democrats are hoping that this is an issue that's really going to shift the midterm outlook for them, I'm not sure. You know, I might have to eat crow on this because I really thought initially when this came down that this was going to be a huge driver, motivator for Democrats, for moderate women. But the worse and worse the economy gets, the more expensive gas gets, the baby formula shortage, I'm starting to think, and I look at this list and I'm like, well, maybe abortion really is not an issue that is going to dictate votes this year. But certainly it's something that Democrats are still very concerned with, the possible repeal of Roe. I spoke with Democratic Congresswoman Marilyn Strickland. She is from Washington State's 10th Congressional District. She's in her first term in Congress. And we had a pretty lengthy conversation. Just a little bit of background here in case you hear some dinging noises. She did this interview. She's right off the side of the House floor. There were votes going on. And she actually at one point had to run in and do a vote. And so she was, I appreciate her. She was fitting this in as she was doing her job for the people she serves. So yeah, it doesn't bother me one bit. But if you hear the dinging, that's what's happening. She's on a very busy House floor. But she and I had, you know, an interesting conversation about the abortion debate. And there's this, what seems like a Democratic talking point going on. I've heard so many Democrats say, oh, if abortion falls, what's next? Is gay marriage going to fall? Is interracial marriage going to fall? We talked about this on the podcast where Congressman Eric Swalwell said that, and I called it fear-mongering. Well, I heard that same line from Congresswoman Strickland, and so she and I had an interesting exchange about that, but I just want to play a good chunk of our interview for you. Before we get into what the country might do, the eventual repeal of Roe, I want to proceed with crystal clarity from you on two points. The first is what your specific stance is on abortion.
So my specific stance on abortion is that I believe that every person who wants to get one should have a right to get it. And, you know, when we obviously talk about abortion specifically, we are talking often about a person's health and well-being. We are talking about, you know, their economic security. A lot of women who actually get abortions are actually people who already have at least one child. And so for me, I fully support someone who wants to get an abortion, and I don't think it should be impeded by the Supreme Court.
To what extent, though, any restrictions on your pro-choice stance?
You know, I mean, I think that this is one of those things where there's a perception that it's just, you know, one extreme or the other. You're like completely pro-life or completely pro-choice. And the reality is that there are nuances when people have to make this horrible, heart-wrenching decision. And so, you know, I mean, I think that for some folks, Randy, they try to say like, you know, people just get abortions all willy-nilly, like they're going to have to buy a pair of shoes. And it is a very hard, heart-wrenching decision that someone has to make. But I believe that body autonomy is very important. And if a person who is pregnant decides that they want to terminate their pregnancy, then that's something that they have the right to do. You know, people think very carefully about this, and it's often about, you know, their health is at risk, or there's just a reason that they decide for family planning purposes that they don't want to bring another child into the world.
Yeah. And statistics show the vast majority of abortions are in the first trimester, but there's a reason I'm asking you to be crystal clear on this. Washington State, for instance, has abortions up to the point of fetal viability, which is determined by a medical provider. In Oregon, you can have abortions up to the point of birth. What do you support specifically?
You know, I mean, I support a woman's right or a person who's pregnant's right to do what they believe is best. And so for me personally, that's not something that I would do, but I respect someone's choice to decide how they want to go about doing it.
So from the perspective of a lawmaker in this country, you support abortion up to the point of birth, if that's what someone chooses to do.
If that's what someone chooses that they need to do. And remember too, Brandy, when people decide that they want to have an abortion up to birth, they may have found out that the child is very sick or has some sort of a congenital defect that they wouldn't be able to live very long. So again, I think sometimes the argument is very black and white. But when someone has to make this horrible decision, there are so many nuances that go into making these very tough decisions.
We have, as I said, a law that provides for abortions up to the point of fetal viability. That's generally 17 to 24 weeks. Do you see any outcome, whatever the outcome is with Roe v. Wade, do you see there being a realistic threat to the law as stands in Washington State?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I believe that the lawmakers in Washington State were very intentional about protecting someone's right to decide to terminate a pregnancy. But I'd say, you know, the impact on the system, Brandy, is going to be that if there are surrounding states around us who've outlawed abortion, people are going to travel to get an abortion. And that means it'll put a stress on our system here and access to Washingtonians' right to, you know, to make that decision. I think the other thing, too, is, you know, if we talk about people not having a right to get an abortion in their state, I mean, people are going to get abortions, Brandy. We want to make sure that they are safe and legal. And so I think that's something that sometimes gets lost in the conversation as well. It's not going to decrease the number of people who have abortions, but we want to make sure that the abortions that people get are safe and legal. And from a bigger picture standpoint, you know, we don't want people to think like, you know, abortion is like the only method of birth control. There are a lot of things that you can do to try and make sure that you don't get pregnant. But in the event that this happens, you know, a woman has a right to choose and a person carrying a child has a right to decide how they want to move forward with their pregnancy or not.
Do you have any reason to believe that the Supreme Court would make a decision ultimately on Roe that differs from the document that was leaked?
You know, that this is just so hard to say, right? I mean, you know, the big mystery is who leaked the document, right? Was it someone who supports abortion? Was it someone who was anti-abortion? And so, of course, there's a lot of speculation. But, you know, it's hard to say where they're going to land on this. I do think that the leak was intentional to really create this debate in this country. Some will say it was used for a political wedge to divide people. Others will say we just need to have a very robust, nuanced discussion about what it is and what it isn't.
And to be clear, are you disturbed by the leak?
You know, I mean, how often does that happen, Brandy? I mean, how often do we have a leak about, you know, a decision that may be coming down from the Supreme Court? But in many ways, I feel as though the leak has really spurred people into action. People have had very robust debates about it. You know, I go to a lot of different types of events here in Washington, D.C. and at home, and this is the number one topic, you know, regardless of where you fall on the spectrum. And so people do care about this topic. You know, I have talked to women of all political persuasions. They are very concerned about this topic. And so I think it's one of those things where, you know, we have to support reproductive rights. We have to respect the right of someone carrying a child to determine how they want that pregnancy to play out, or if they want to keep the child. But I think, again, this comes to body autonomy and choice.
But does it concern you to have an institution like the Supreme Court with a leak of that nature?
Yeah, I mean, it's disturbing, right? I mean, what does it say about the integrity of the court if this type of information gets leaked out? And is this going to become more common now? So clearly there's a conversation here about the integrity of the court if this type of information is getting leaked out. And think about this too, Brandy. Think about how, you know, we have traditionally gotten information back in the day, right? Not that far long ago. We would read the paper, we would watch TV or listen to the radio. And because there's so many channels and ways to get information, you know, it just comes out, it's exaggerated, sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not. And so I don't know that this is going to serve the people in the best way. So it's disturbing. And also too, Brandy, you know, think about some of the things that have happened with the Supreme Court. You know, there was an issue with voting rights and they have done some damage to voting rights. Now they're attacking Roe v. Wade. And although some people think it's really far-fetched, you know, is marriage equality next? Is interracial marriage next? Loving v. Virginia. And even the whole conversation about, you know, access to a public education, Brown versus Board of Education, because we are hearing conversations at school board levels about critical race theory. And you can see how that could roll into something like that. And so I think there's just a concern about the makeup of the court and how they're making decisions, but the leak does not give you a lot of confidence in the process.
A lot to unpack there. I do have to push back on the interracial marriage thing. And you know, I understand the fear, for instance, for people in this country who are looking at this and they're seeing a rollback of precedent. And they're like, well, what's to say that a marriage that I've been living under that I thought was legal could one day not be legal? And so I'm not going to dismiss the concerns that people have about that. But, you know, the idea of the Supreme Court rolling back like interracial marriage to me sounds like fear mongering.
No, well, you know, maybe, you know, in your life experience, that's something that doesn't seem real to you. When my parents came to the United States and my mom and dad came from Korea, it was illegal for them to be married in my lifetime in 1964. And if you talk to some people, there are people in this country in some states who still are against interracial marriage. And even think about the whole conversation about interracial relationships and some of the things that have happened, you know, the whole idea of some of these young Black men who were back in the day accused of looking at a white woman the wrong way, and all of a sudden he ends up lynched or hurt. And so again, we think these things seem so out of, you think to yourself, this wouldn't happen this day and age, but you just never know what people believe and what they're willing to do.
Well, there are racist, crazy people in this country. I mean, just look at Buffalo, New York, but Justice Thomas is married to a white woman.
Yes, and Justice Thomas often votes and rules on things that are against his own interests. So, yeah, you know.
I don't think that Justice Thomas would rule against something that he's actively engaged in. Do you? Let's be realistic.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me.
Really? It would not surprise you if Justice Clarence Thomas voted to repeal the rights of interracial couples to be married?
Or he could say that moving forward, they're against the law. Absolutely.
It really wouldn't surprise you, Congresswoman, to solidify his own and to take it away from people moving forward, interracial marriage?
Clarence Thomas is an African-American man who voted against voting rights, the very rights that people have fought for. I mean, he is a beneficiary of people fighting and dying to have the right to vote and to participate in democracy. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's disappointing. But at the same time, you know, it's just hard to say what people are capable of these days. And I remind folks that Loving v. Virginia was not that long ago. And there are people who have gone on record saying that they're against interracial marriage.
There's much more to that interview with Democratic Congresswoman Marilyn Strickland about reproductive rights in America. It is airing Sunday on the Undivided Digital Show. You must be a subscriber to watch it. You can become a subscriber for as little as $5 a month. In two ways, patreon.com/undivided, that's patreon.com/undivided, or by becoming a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. That's it for this episode of the Undivided podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to my subscribers who are helping to fuel this mission to give common sense a comeback. And thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com.